Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Get behind the wheel of your new Opel at the Opel Open Road event now on at your Opel dealer.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now it's time for The Gathering. We're going to discuss the big stories of the week, and I'm joined in studio by Oisin Smith, Minister of State with responsibility for e-government and Green Party TD for Dunleary, Pather Tobin, leader of AIM2 and TD for Meath West, and Elaine Loughlin, Deputy Political Editor with The Examiner. You're all very welcome. Thank you for being here. Minister, I'll start with you. Loads of calls and emails coming into this programme this week, and I know to lots of other media organisations as well, people spending hours on the phone trying to get their digital COVID certificate or trying to get errors sorted out. There may even be people listening to this programme who have the phone up to the ear waiting on the line. It's really faced big problems, hasn't it?
It has, and I've had a lot of calls to my office about it, and I have to acknowledge that the helpline has been overloaded, that no Irish citizen should have to wait hours on the phone to get a service from the government, and in this case obtaining their medical record from the Department of Health. And I apologise to everybody who's had to wait. And I can see as well that a lot of times those people are getting ready to go on a foreign trip. It's stressful enough as it is. They're trying to line everything up and they're not getting their medical record that they're entitled to. So that has been, I have to say, that's not acceptable.
Because the intention was that this helpline would be for people who had issues, had problems. But what seems to be happening is people aren't getting their certs. There are a lot of people who are sitting there waiting for this to pop into their inbox, and that's not happening. Is that the case?
Well, we sent out 2.5 million certs, and when you do something 2.5 million times, you know, sometimes there are exceptions. So the level, I think, at this stage is 3% of people who didn't get their cert, and there's two big reasons for that. One is that they've moved home, or that they've changed email address. More likely is that the data was never sent up or wasn't sent accurately from wherever they were vaccinated. It didn't make it, or it got lost in the ransomware attack. And finally, there's a category of people who have a different name that they use on their passport from the name that they use commonly as they go around in life.
So it's their fault.
So it doesn't match, and that generally doesn't cause them a problem. But you know, you're christened, and this is very common in Ireland. You're christened one name, you go by another, or you like to use the Irish version of your name or whatever. And you know, Timmy Dooley said to me he hates being called Timothy Dooley.
don't blame the public here. No. Just giving you a bit of advice. Don't blame people for
absolutely
not using the right name. Are you getting calls about this?
Yeah, look, I know of one particular woman who was in our office. She has a son who's living abroad with stage 4 cancer. She had a flight to get to meet her son. She missed her flight because she didn't get her digital cert in time. I know of another woman who started the phone call at 11:15 and actually got speaking to somebody at 5 p.m. That day. Less than 10% of people of the phone calls are actually being answered. You know, and really silly mistakes. Like, we have people called Connolly getting, their certs in Keneally. We have Sheena Fathers being missed from 17,000 people. We have the URL address of a site that was spelled wrong. And you know, these are like, a proofreader in a newspaper would read an article before it goes out. Never mind a system in which many people are depending on life and death issues. And at the heart of this, like, you know, we're going to be talking about this, Claire, these types of problems for years, because at the heart of this is an absence of a centralised database, a system of citizens in this country, such as Denmark has. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the reason why we had problems with the vaccines being missed with people who had cancer, because we were depending on lists from doctors and depending on lists from consultants, and people were falling between the cracks. And that's what's happening here again.
This is the most complete medical record in Ireland that we have. And for the first time, as a result of the vaccination programme, we've managed to reach nearly everybody in the country. And we actually have all of the medical information, a small amount of medical information relating to each person in one central system for the first time. And the Department of Health has attempted to send out medical records to everybody in the country who has been vaccinated. And as a result of that, those people whose data didn't make it back from their medical professional is showing up. Mm-hmm. And that record, this is not an ongoing problem for the future. Those records are actually being corrected. Okay. And I am really delighted that what we're going to have is a complete medical record online for the first time.
But apart from that, what's happening now to sort this problem out? Are you getting more staff? Are you doing something online so that people can access their DCC?
So the Department of Health has doubled the number of people who are answering the calls. But the long-term answer, and every day they're clearing thousands of the backlog, right? So I think we started at 160,000 backlog. We're down to 90,000. They're getting through 8,000 a day at the moment. And so we're reaching a point where we have a complete medical record over everybody who's been vaccinated, which is absolutely...
Is the phone being answered? That's what people want to know.
There is a problem with the number of, with how long people are waiting for the phone. But this is a short-term problem until the backlog is clear.
How many people are
every day? 25,000 people extra are getting their final dose of vaccine. We are getting their certs out within 2 days of them being vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So so what we have in place is a system that is working for the future. The backlog is being cleared,
So what about this online portal that I see? It's reported that this is being launched today. So people will be able to go online to access their cert.
It should have been an online portal from the start. So I just want to say that, you know, a call centre is very much, an idea from the past that, ringing a call centre and waiting for hours for
But you're
for
in
service.
Charge of this.
No, I'm not. The Department of Health is.
Okay.
But
your portfolio is e-government.
It is, absolutely. And I'm extremely keen, and I've been working closely with Sláintecare to bring in for the first time a system whereby you can log on to the HSE and access some of your medical data, which you can do in the Department of Social Protection, you can do in revenue, you can do it in departments all the way across government. People claim their PUP payment online. Okay. And part of my role is to go out to the other departments and to encourage them to get something online.
Okay.
And for the first time, the vaccination system will be online.
Okay. While we focused on two cohorts, there are two different groups. The first group who didn't get their cert and are ringing up. The second group who are called Sean instead of John. And it goes beyond names because I have a family member whose date of birth was incorrectly stated on their COVID digital cert.
Through no fault of their own.
No fault of their own. And, you know, while Sean called John may get you into a pub, it's not going to get you onto a plane. Likewise, the wrong date of birth. So this is a significant issue. But there's also the third group of people who are ringing up simply looking for a bit of information on what's the story in Portugal or Spain. And that really could have been alleviated if the government has had a long lead in time. They've had months to prepare for this. We are one of the last countries in the EU implementing the EU digital cert. So there was lots of planning and time available to the government. If we had had a strong media campaign informing the public of how it's going to work, where they'll get information if they want to travel, where they should go, whether it's the helpline or to a foreign website to find out what the story is when they do go abroad, you might have had far fewer people ringing the helpline now to find out what is the issue if I go abroad and the criteria in other countries.
Okay. I think it's stunning, though, when you ask who's responsible for this, that the Minister for E-Government says that he is not responsible for that, the Department of Health is responsible, and that at the end of the Department of Health, there is a political responsibility there. And as Elaine said, you know, everybody else in Europe got this together at the start of July. We were a fortnight late. You know, there was tolerance at the start for people going, yes, this is a big job. It is difficult. And I understand that the government are going to be making mistakes on this. But that tolerance is evaporating at the moment amongst people. At the heart of this is that you created this process for travel, and now it's being used for hospitality as well. You created the resource for travel, but the hospitality element magnified the amount of demand on it, and you didn't take that into consideration.
So, in fact, what's happening this week, we've had hardly any calls about hospitality. Hospitality has been working in practice. I think that your listeners will know that they have been going in and out of restaurants and cafes and pubs, and that the system has actually been working in practice. The number of people going through Dublin Airport has massively increased since it started. The number of people coming into the country has greatly increased. And so, in fact, what's happened is that there's been a huge positive effect as a result of the digital COVID.
So once you have it, it works well, as we're saying.
You got yours, I got mine, everybody I know got it. But there are 3% of people, because of fundamental errors in their medical record, which will be corrected, which are resulting in a backlog, which I apologise.
Okay.
And really, we are coming towards something which is a much better situation than we were ever in before in regards to medical records being
online. Can we move on to something else? Because we have limited time, and this is the appointment of Catherine Zappone, the former Children's Minister and Independent TD, to the role of UN Special Envoy on Freedom of Opinion and Expression. It didn't involve an open competition. Opposition politicians, I think including yourself, Padraig Tobin, have said that this amounts to cronyism. The Green Party don't have a problem with this, is that right?
That's not true. I just want to say for a start that this.
Well, Eamon Ryan defended the appointment on radio yesterday.
Well, I think that that this is not how appointments should happen in future. I think that with any type of public appointment, you know, with state money, that there should be some form of competition and that it should be done in a transparent way. And I think that a lesson has been learned from this, from the way that it was done. And I think the reason that it sticks out and that it's newsworthy is that it's so exceptional. You know, that this is not how people are. There is a state board's website. There are competitive processes for hiring people, regardless of whether the fact that, obviously, Catherine Zappone is extremely qualified and nobody is questioning whether or not she's going to do a good job or not. But that's not the point. That in any
it's
situation,
just interesting because both your own party and it would seem Fianna Fáil have an issue with this, and yet you've both just allowed it to happen.
I think that it was a mistake in that it should have had more transparency. It should have been advertised and it should have been done in a more competitive way. But I think it was the 41st item on a cabinet meeting, which is deciding a spend of €1.5 billion euros every week. It's possible that if you're at a meeting with 41 things on it and one of those items can be decided too quickly. And I think that it was an oversight. So, I think that you know, people are not perfect. And I think that in future, the lesson learned from this is that every public appointment should be subject to a competitive, transparent process.
An incredible situation where a friend and former colleague of a minister who has access to power can go to that minister and ask for a job, get the job, and then it gets basically rubber stamped at cabinet. Now, I don't know, did Eamon Ryan know about this in advance? I know that the Taoiseach didn't know, but what the Taoiseach did was, not knowing, he still rolled over, rubber stamped, and allowed for this to happen. An incredible situation. And at the end, every single time this type of stuff comes up in front of the media, the statement is, this shouldn't have happened, we need to change. Yet nobody has given us any commitment to actually promising that this will never ever happen again, or putting into a system to stop a system, to stop cronyism, and introduce mandatory merit for roles. I heard Eamon Ryan yesterday say on the radio that she is the best person for the job. She was in a competition of one person, Claire. How do you know who's the best person for the job when one person in a competition? Mm-hmm. And yet, even at this moment in time, we don't know. Simon Coveney has not come out and said whether or not Catherine Zappone asked for this job to be created for her. That's stunning.
And the minister as well has just said that this is exceptional because this is not the way things are done. And I accept that there were 42 items on that agenda. It was a packed agenda, the last cabinet meeting before the summer break. But if it was so exceptional, why was it still let go ahead? And why wasn't it perhaps, like other things, deferred and another cabinet meeting called either later in the week or next week? And I think one of the things that stuck out for me, Claire, as well, is the €15,000 that Ms. Zappone will be paid. She will be paid up to 60 days in this role, and it will equate to roughly that amount. And it has been dismissed by a number of government TDs on the airways as, it's only 15 grand. It's only a small amount. And I think when you compare it to the tens of thousands of people who've been on the PUP for the past 12 months, if you were on PUP over the past year, on the top rate, you will have earned around €18,200 and you will have had your livelihood taken away from you, essentially. Not the government's fault, it's COVID, we all accept that. But I think it'll be galling to people like that who see that for, you know, 12 months they get 18,200 for 60 days, albeit Ms. Zappone may work a lot longer hours than that, you get €15,000. And dismissing it as only 15 grand is really, it will annoy a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree that you can't dismiss it based on the amount of money involved. 15,000 is not a drop in the ocean. It doesn't matter how much money it is. If there is a, you know, a paid appointment being made by the state, then there should be a competitive process and it should be transparent and you should look at a number of different people. Cool. And that's how, and this is newsworthy because it is exceptional. It's not the only time it's happened, but it's extremely
Leo Varadkar was on here and he was the one who said on this programme that Catherine Zappone approached Simon Coveney about this. Would it be helpful to you if Simon Coveney were to explain exactly how this came about?
I think, I'm sure the more that Simon Coveney says about it, the better. I certainly don't know what the details were.
His silence is deafening in this situation. Like I've heard the Taoiseach yesterday say he still doesn't know how this came about. And, you know, many people voted for the Greens because potentially they were a watchdog on what were two parties that maybe had a history of this type of behaviour. They haven't provided that that service of being a watchdog in this occasion. And it's remarkable how tolerant that the Taoiseach is, Micheál Martin, when Fine Gael pulled maybe a stroke like this over him. And, you know, we had the Taoiseach leak a document to his friend, a confidential contract to his friend previously. This is not exceptional in politics where inner circles or insiders get benefits.
I want to leave this here because I have a question for you now, because I had Professor Karina Butler in here from NIAC explaining her decision around vaccinating the 12 to 15-year-olds. And I was saying to her that your own party, Aon Thu, tweeted during the week that many families will be very cautious about this because the damage that COVID does to this age cohort is very low and there's been no long-term testing of these vaccines. Now, she went on to explain why she had made her decision. But I was looking at that on social media when it was issued, and I noticed that a number of anti-vaxxers use that to prop up their arguments. How do you feel about that?
Well, first of all, we're not an anti-vax party at all. Actually, vaccinations are probably one of the most important medical innovations. They've saved hundreds of millions of lives, etc. The WHO themselves have said that it is better for countries to vaccinate people in more vulnerable cohorts than in less vulnerable cohorts.
We've done that though.
No, for example, less than 2% of the global south are actually vaccinated at the moment. And the WHO have actually said to Western countries like ourselves, it's better to stop variants.
That's
developing.
Not what the tweet said.
No.
You said there's been no long-term testing of these vaccines. And you also said the damage that COVID does to this age cohort is very low. So you're raising doubt about the NIAC decision there. Well, you're questioning their logic behind recommending it for 12 to 15
years. It is my job to question NPHET and NIAC and government. And there's international disagreement on whether or not enough long-term research has been done on this.
And well, who disagrees?
Well, other countries, for example, like Britain, are not actually rolling this out. What they're doing is they're rolling this out in this age cohort only for people who have serious underlying illnesses first. But our point in this is that there was a worry amongst many parents that they will be forced, maybe through a mandatory vaccination, to go down this route at this age profile. If they were to send their kids to school, for example. And I don't believe it's right. So I think each parent...
That's not happening, though.
To be honest, actually, we have had other government ministers say that they're in favour of mandatory vaccines. So, for example, Simon Harris has said previously that he is in favour of parents who want to send their kids to creches should have to have a vaccine applied before they can do that.
You're talking about childhood vaccines.
And one of the points here, if I can...
And he received advice from the Attorney General and that plan was abandoned.
Absolutely, and I'm delighted that
I think we're mixing up here COVID vaccines and
general childhood vaccines. Can I just briefly make this point? The government also said it wasn't going to have a mandatory vaccine for hospitality. It changed its mind on this. And I'm delighted that the minister has said he's not going to have a mandatory vaccine access for schools, etc. I do believe that parents should be able to make their own decisions freely on this.
Okay.
And Elaine, I just want to pick up on Patter there, because I think Minister Harris had wanted mandatory vaccination for the MMR, which is very different to the COVID, and there will be no mandatory vaccination when it comes to the COVID vaccine. So I think that should be clarified. But you can understand how parents may be questioning this. It's a significant burden to decide whether someone else who you are in the care of, whether that's an elderly relative or your own child, gets a vaccine.
All right.
So you can understand why they question
Unfortunately,
that.
We have to leave it there. I want to thank you all very much indeed to Elaine Loughlin, Pather Tobin and Oisín Smith. Let's take a break.
Today with Clare Byrne. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.